think it's pretty cool. So guys, this is us. We're done for today.
Right.
And, you know, I just want to say
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Stay frosty. We'll see you next week.
Stop saying that.
I can't.
I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, covering a local production company's plans to build a $20 million film studio in Kingston.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. Local production company Branded to Film is almost ready to embark on a $20 million studio project in Kingston's East End. Major productions often pass through to get shots of the city, with visitors including Murdoch Mysteries and Crimson Peak. However, Branded to Film is looking to help the city take a step towards becoming a hub for Canadian film production, with a full-fledged modern studio. In the past 2 years, Branded to Film has already made a significant impact on Kingston's film sector, shooting two full productions locally with a majority local crew. They are now leading the charge to build the infrastructure needed for a sustainable, homegrown industry, with Jason Jolly, founder and CEO of Branded to Film, spearheading the studio project. In an interview with CFRC, Jolly dove into where the project started and where Kingston's film industry could be headed.
I kind of realized that Kingston has all of the right ingredients, from location diversity to talent to, you know, young people looking to build careers in the creative industries. And just even the, you know, the cost of land and the fact that Kingston actually had a film office. It's the only film office between Toronto, Montreal, and Ottawa. So, you know, but what I couldn't figure out is, you know, why it was still kind of what I call a place where producers from Toronto just came and spent like 5 days to shoot our limestone, rather than a producer actually setting up shop and shooting what I call like hyper-local films, where they're like end-to-end productions where you develop, pre-produce, and produce films here. And that's really where the story began. Is so in 2022, we started the company. We were really lucky to have some really really influential cultural and business leaders, including, you know, our first two investors were Paul and Gord from The Hip, and who really saw the same vision we did, which was, can we build this new creative sector, which is film and television? And, you know, as a lot of folks may or may not know, is film is, by its nature, production is a very diversified skill set. Like, we have jobs for everybody. So if you're into acting, if you're into catering, if you're into wardrobe, carpentry, transport, whatever, we have a role for you on a film set. So that's what makes it an exciting industry. And what was interesting about Kingston is they really had this kind of, you know, with Megan at Tourism Kingston, she really had a vision not only to create the film office, but also is how do we turn this into a viable, sustainable sector?
You gave some background on, you know, how the film industry has grown over all these years. How will this studio bring us to the next level?
Well, what a studio represents, it's two things. It's one, there's, you know, a studio at its core is just a big black box. But it's one of those necessary things. Like if you look at our world, especially we're in a very much a streaming world, is where most people consume that kind of long form content. We're very much a series kind of world now. Like, sure, we have lots of feature films and stuff like this, but the most people and, you know, the biggest part of our industry that's grown is really in that kind of series, capacity. as you can tell by the number of series that drop all the times that people, you know, binge and all that kind of stuff. So where a studio is really helpful is to kind of get to that next level. So yes, of course, we'll, you know, you can shoot, we're going to have, all the things we need to do what's called virtual production. So green screen, LED wall, all that kind of stuff. That's very, modern style of filmmaking with also a traditional element in one of the stages where you can still, build traditional sets. But where a studio really helps is really to scale the business. So apart from what I do now, which is shooting most of, the two films we've done, we shot all on location. This enables us to move to a place where we can start attracting series work. And series, yes, they shoot on location, especially, when you see a pilot of a series, it's all like real locations. But in terms of a continuity going season to season, what you really want to do is when you, those key sets, you really want to have a studio to build those so they're attainable. If I have in the My Pilot, if I have a toucan, I can't expect that the toucan is going to be available every day that I need it for the next, not just this season, but season two and season three. So the thing that you normally do is you would, why a series is important. I know this is a very long-winded answer, but it enables you to move from just simple, independent film to larger series, in lack of a better word, which are, ongoing and recurring, and which that's when you really see an industry grow. And, when we look at a place like Kingston, Kingston is kind of a magic place. It's very uniquely positioned. 35% of Canadians live within 2.5 hours of here. It's a big little city. It's a city that's at an inflection point. I like to call it the Austin of Canada. It's got a very strong music base, but, on top of that, we've got an incredible nighttime economy. Obviously, we have really great, schools like Queen's and St. Lawrence and stuff there. And just the ability that, if you want, you can go to Toronto, Montreal, or Ottawa, and it's, 5.5 hours to Manhattan, which is all really interesting things to grow. What I think will be, in 10 years, the way we forecast and model our business could be a $100 million business here.
The studio has received support from local businesses and influential figures, with the very first two investors being Paul Langlois and the late Gord Downey from The Tragically Hip. With the project now being 75% financed, Jolly is hopeful they will be able to announce when they're putting shovels in the ground at the upcoming 25th anniversary of the Kingston Canadian Film Festival. 10 acres of land have already been secured for the project, about 8 minutes from downtown and 2 minutes from the 401. Jolly has hopes the studio can play a key role in fostering the next generation of filmmakers and creative professionals in Kingston.
And, if you talk to all of our original seed investors, a lot of them were just like, how do we keep our kids here? How do we bring our kids back? How do we give them a creative industry, which is something we don't have here? So we don't hemorrhage, our youth and our, and those kind of, assets to the big city. I was one of those kids back in the day that, and my question was, how do we make sure that Jay Jolly, no matter who she is, can stay in Kingston if she wants to and pursue her career in film or television or whatever kind of, parallel kind of creative pursuits.
This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen reading a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Napanee Beaver, Sarah Williams, about future plans for the Market Square Farmers Market and the town's Blue Bin Program.
Thank you, Jesse. Napanee Council convened their last meeting before the new year on December 10th. Among topics of discussion were a Market Square Farmers Market partnership, changes to the recycling program, and the adoption of an emergency plan. Council engaged in a discussion surrounding the Market Square partnership. This was inspired not only by a staff report on the Market Square partnership, but also by a presentation from the Lennox and Addington Chamber of Commerce. Earlier this year, the Market Square Advisory Committee recommended that the town accommodate uses such as a farmer's market in the Market Square precinct. Not long after adopting the committee's recommendations, the town was approached by the chamber, who offered to develop a farmer's market. Support for this partnership was mixed among counselors. Counselor Dave Pennell expressed dismay that council would consider this partnership before putting the call out for other community organizations to express interest. Ultimately, council passed a motion to accept the staff's recommendation and move forward with creating a partnership agreement for council to review. Changes to the town's recycling program will begin effective January 1st, 2025. On this date, Circular Material Ontario, or CMO, will be taking over responsibility for Napanee's waste disposal sites. The town will no longer be collecting the revenue associated with recycling, approximately $7,000, but they will also not be responsible for the processing costs, which are approximately $18,000. With so much change coming to the recycling operations throughout the town of Napanee and the province, council received a communications plan from staff detailing how these changes will effectively be relayed to the public. The town will be receiving approximately $1,000 a month from CMO to communicate these changes to residents. Finally, the council received a report regarding the Human Resources Emergency Response Plan. This plan must be reviewed yearly as per the Emergency Management and Civil Protections Act. Council received this report without comment. And thank you to Sarah Williams for that report. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LJR reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about Lansdowne Town Council's interest in purchasing two properties on Old River Road.
Thank you, Dinah. Two vacant properties in the township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands have been approved for vesting, with the township eventually assuming ownership. This was done unanimously during last week's council meeting in Lansdowne's Town Hall Council Chambers. The two properties are located beside each other between Old River Road and the Thousand Islands Parkway. The properties will provide room for roadside drainage and future widening as required on Old River Road. Both properties are vacant save hydro lines running east to west through the area. As such, the combined financial impact for the town has been set at $13,428.17. This is the municipal portion of the tax arrears owing on both roll numbers, and includes penalty and interest as well as fees for the tax sale consultant. Now that the township will vest the properties, they become tax-exempt properties under the ownership of the municipality. The municipality would forego future tax revenue on each of the roll numbers.
And thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. And now over to the LJR reporter for CJAI-FM, Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story about the results of a fundraising campaign study conducted by BNP Goldie Canada.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Nearly 60% of respondents in a fundraising campaign study for the W.J. Henderson Recreation Center said they'd be likely to donate towards the $2 million goal. Interviews for the study were conducted by BNP Goldie Canada. Loyalist Township Council approved the motion to receive the report and approved commencement of the capital campaign outlined within it. Senior consultant with BNP Goldie Canada, Lee Pigeot, spoke about the amount of people willing to donate.
Close to 60% of people said they would make a donation. They're ready to give. And those who weren't sure, nobody said no, some said unsure. The majority of those said they were likely to give if they could understand the rationale behind it a little better. So that, again, it was seen as a fairly positive comment.
Pigeot explains the focus of the study.
Our question was to determine whether raising $2 million in donations for the renewal of the W.J. Henderson Recreation Center in donations and sponsorship is realistic and achievable. So we wanted to determine whether a fundraising campaign could be undertaken and how much support that campaign would have in the community. We wanted to identify the level of participation in that fundraising campaign by donors and volunteers, and to identify campaign leaders and to assess their level of engagement so we know who would be working with Loyalist to raise the funds.
Pigeot detailed the process they took in the study.
We prepare a case for support or a rationale around the question. We work to get a list of people to interview, influencers, decision makers, people in the know, in the community. We prepare an agreed to interview questionnaire, and we send out some meeting requests by email and follow them up. Then, of course, we do the appointments. And then our third phase, of course, is the consolidation of those results, our analysis, the creation of the report, and that all happened between September and today's date.
Peugeot noted the main demographics that showed interest.
There were generally two types of people that were considered to be interested in the project itself, and that's the newer, younger residents and potential residents of Loyalist Township who want services like this and will move into an area where there are services. And then there are more established residents who are interested in the project because they wanted something to be proud of.
Peugeot explained some of the challenges they found in the study.
The challenges of running a $2 million campaign right now was that there are competition from other large charities, such as the hospitals and post-secondary institutes in the area. There is a perception from some people that it is already built because it is, and therefore is already paid for. So why would you need a campaign? The general economy and community demographics were seen by some as a challenge. It was also commented that not everybody uses it. There are some regional dynamics at play because Loyalist is a smaller community next to a larger community. And there were some who wondered that aren't the taxes already paying for it?
Peugeot spoke about the response to the $2 million goal itself.
We talked about and we tested the $2 million goal. The feedback we got was either uncertain or positive. There was no negativity around that. And the uncertainty we had was people projecting their uncertainty onto others. So the people we interviewed said, I think it's a great idea, but I'm not sure how others would take the goal. So that was really an interesting part of the campaign for us and something, again, that will need to be addressed in communication.
Peugeot noted some common themes brought up within the interviews.
There was general agreement that the facility is needed and a new facility, that it is a world-class project. It's not just another arena. It is regional. It is not just Loyalist Township that they would bring people in from other areas. And that many clubs, groups, and ages can participate in the community campaign, that there would be broad acceptance from the general community. And there was a broad support for donations and participation across the interviews.
Peugeot detailed the next steps.
The immediate next steps is that our organization, BMP, will create a campaign plan and timeline that will put all of this together, include a campaign committee, a working committee of those volunteers who are going to hit the ground, get out there, and get the major donations. That will mean in terms of reference, the scope, the scale of what they're doing. A fundraising advisory committee that would be made up of both council staff and volunteers so that there would be a bit of an oversight to what's going on. And specifically around timing, goals, and naming opportunities. And again, that's about quantifying something so that you know when you've achieved something. And specifically, a very strong communications plan that sets out actionable items as well as strategy to make the campaign successful.
Peugeot went on to speak about a timeline for next year and beyond.
In January, we will complete the campaign case, the justification, the full rationale around it, as well as recruiting campaign leadership, getting a campaign chair specifically. And then next year, we would start with recruiting the other committee members, finalizing the communication materials themselves, create a campaign reference guide and training materials for those volunteers and staff, those question and answers, scenarios, the ability for people to move forward on some things like that. And then finally, next January, have our final report and future planning for sponsorship and other activities.
Peugeot noted the positive outlook in the interviews and highlighted a positive quote.
One of the big things that came out of it was that it was a legacy project. It was a rallying point for the community. This is a once-in-a-generation project, as in this quote. It's a community hub. It's safe and it's accessible space. It's something that many people in this council probably would only make a decision on once in a lifetime.
Mayor Jim Hagedorn spoke about the report and where the township stands.
Had great information, and looks like we've got a solid plan to start moving forward on.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Next is the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about the resignation of the artistic director of the Regent Theatre.
The Regent Theatre in Picton was filled with concertgoers excited to hear Juno-nominated and homegrown R&B singer Miss Emily. She raised the roof with her powerful performance, but the mood suddenly changed when Alexandra Say, artistic director for the Regent, announced to the audience that she is stepping down from the position.
I'm standing here today to share the news with you that, as a result of funding shortfalls, the Regent Theatre is no longer able to support the continuance of two full-time positions, both an artistic director, that's me, and a general manager. And so, in order to free up some of those funds, to redistribute them back into the Regent Theatre, effective today, I'm stepping down as artistic director.
After the show, and with unavoidable background noise from the band dismantling their equipment, Alexandra spoke with media about her achievements, the community, and funding.
There are a lot of things that have changed here over the last 5 years. I mentioned a few of them this evening. But between December 9th, 2019, which was my very first day, and now, there was approximately $1.5 million raised that went into this building. And that was, as I said from the stage, is thanks to our community and our community of support. And so everything from redesigning our lobby bar to our accessible seating, which we didn't have a lot of before, and now we have accessible seating terraces, to the complete renovation of the auditorium from the floors to the seats to the walls, to the theatrical equipment being upgraded. Some of the changes are invisible to the naked eye, things like motorizing grids and new lighting fixtures. But there have been massive changes here, and I take an enormous amount of pleasure in the response that artists have to this place when they come here now, because that was my goal when I arrived, to make this a place where artists would be proud to come back. And we're seeing that, and we saw that today with Miss Emily. She's been here since the beginning of the beginning, and that's a real testament to the Regent's place in this community. So there's those physical upgrades that have been very significant. And then over the last year, while I've been the artistic director, there have been a lot of programming achievements as well. CAF is the most obvious one. And people are still talking about it, which is the best possible thing for the festival and for the Regent. It was designed to work with partners across the county to increase the visibility and create collaboration opportunities in the off season, and we did that. And more than that, we actually made money for the Regent Theater, which was the goal. And the fact that a first year festival can do that is remarkable. And part of that is about programming, and part of that is building on the success of the programming that already existed here at the Regent. Because in a lot of ways, CAF was born out of the series programming that we did. And it continues with more series programming that I've been able to put in place over the last year. So I'm very proud of those achievements.
But also importantly, you came in just before COVID.
Yeah.
And you being able to have people watch from home, that had never been done before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody would have even thought of that. So what an incredible, what a time to come in
Oh,
and
yeah.
then be faced with that.
Oh,
well,
it was
for everybody, of course.
For everybody, right? Everybody. But that was a complete trial by fire.
Yeah.
for everybody, you know, like, what were we going to do? And we weren't the only arts organization to pivot that dramatically, but it kept us going through the pandemic. And the fact that we were able to keep going and that we were able to use that time to do the upgrades so that we could reopen with new programming and with an improved facility, that was actually a huge boon to us. And there was a lot of funding around during COVID.
The upside, I guess.
The upside was there was operational funding during the pandemic, which is something that is not common in the arts for an organization like us, because we're a venue. Yes, we produce movies, but we are a venue. So it's very challenging for an organization like us to get operating funding. And so that some of that was there through the pandemic. And that was huge for us. And it enabled us to survive. So, I mean, as an organization, I've said this before, we do not receive operational funding from any level of government, including the municipality. And so that is a challenging place for any not-for-profit to exist in, particularly one of our size. And so that's a challenge that I have been dealing with for the last 5 years, and is something that the region will continue to have to deal with in the future.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over now to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN Coburg, Dan Jones, with a story about the impact the Canada Post strike has had on charities in Northumberland County.
Some charities in the Northumberland region are already seeing a decrease in donations, but the nearly month-long Canada Post strike is adding pressure. Christmas is the giving season, where donations can amount for 50 to 20% of a charity's annual revenue. Jen Johnstone, the executive director of the Alzheimer's Society of Peterborough, Kawartha Lakes, Northumberland, and Halliburton, says the high cost of living, inflation, and the strike are producing lower than expected donations.
We absolutely send out emails, although we do that every year as well. We're leveraging social media. And of course, the other piece that we are adding in is that we are making phone calls to our donor base, just to let them know that, we're still accepting donations this year, and that they may not receive that letter in the mail, due to the postal strike.
Johnstone says the Alzheimer's Society is pivoting from its annual mail campaign in November to utilizing social media, emails, and phone calls to solicit donations. Donations are generally received towards the end of the year to maximize tax incentives. Yet most people who donate to the Alzheimer's Society are older but more cautious about giving money online.
Our area that we live in generally has a high population of older adults, and not all older adults are necessarily comfortable making online donations. And we also know donors are typically older adults as well. And so, you know, the two things combined together really do make it quite challenging, both for donors and for charities.
Johnstone stresses that donating online is completely safe, but offers telephone or in-person as alternatives to the internet. Once the strike is over, Johnstone anticipates some donations to come through the mail, but is worried this may be outside the Christmas campaign. 55,000 Canada Post workers have been striking since November 14th. For CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
Thank you to Dan Jones for that story. And now over to Jesse Bell for the CFRC Environment Canada Weather Report.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. After a period of early week warm weather, Thursday, December 19th marked a return to seasonal conditions with a daytime high of -3, dropping down to -7 overnight with a 40% chance of flurries. Friday, December 20th, daytime high of -3 with a 40% chance of flurries, dropping down to a chilly -13 overnight. Moving into the weekend, Saturday, December 21st is going to be a bright, sunny day, but it's going to be bitterly cold with a daytime high of -10 and an overnight low of -18. Sunday, December 22nd, slightly warmer, daytime high of -9, and it will be a beautiful, sunny day. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, December 23rd, we're going to see a daytime high of -6 and an overnight low of -14. This concludes your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering. CFRC 101.9 FM has launched its annual funding drive to raise $25,000 to support station operations, news and creative programming, and upgrades to our recording and performance studios. You can make a difference. Visit CFRC.ca right now and make your gift. Get a tax receipt through Queen's University or get sweet CFRC swag and enter to win our weekly raffle draws featuring gifts from amazing local donors. More information at CFRC.ca. Thank you for your support.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. My name is Cindy. This is Absolutely Frivolous. Welcome to CFRC and Absolutely Frivolous. I'm so glad to be here. I hope you are too. I hope you enjoy coming to the radio station. I know I do. And by coming to the radio station, I mean listening to the radio station. Sometimes some of you come to the radio station and you meet us here and you see our lounge and our huge library of music and other stuff, not just music, a lot of spoken word back there too, you know. And we have a lot of fun when we do a tour around here. And so keep your eyes out, open for any, like, I don't know, open houses that we have, I guess is the best way to put it. Usually like around in the fall when they do, you know, their homecoming stuff, or we have big events like when we turned 100 years old. And yes, it is great to come down here. You're welcome to come down here during office hours, meet the staff too, and get a, you know, find out a little bit more about the station, especially if you're interested in volunteering here. We do a, like, fundraising, as you are well aware of if you've been listening to this station, and we are very grateful for any funds that you can donate to our little station at CFRC.ca. All the information is there, of course, and how you can do it. There's other things that's going on all the time here at the station too. So I highly recommend you check out our website. And if you want to come on down during office hours, definitely do that. Maybe call the main line 533-2121 and talk to one of the staff and see if they're going to be around at the time that you want to come down, and they can sort of give you some background about the station. But there's a lot of good stuff on our website, like I said. We're also on social media, of course, yeah, you can listen to our different shows on the air at any time. And often people are talking about how much they love CFRC. If you love CFRC too, please find it in your heart to give a little bit of money. That would be awesome. We have a lot of swag for certain levels of donation. And we have a raffle every week if you do donate. And the more money you donate, the more tickets to the raffle. It's just a really good system. And we appreciate our listeners, and that's why we like to give back with all very cool swag. I can't tell you how much I'm loving the CFRC coasters. They're cork and they're just really cute. I just really like them. And of course, the deck of cards, the logo is just, I love our graphic this year and last year. I think we're using the same one because it's just so well done. And it just exemplifies everything about CFRC. It's retro and yet still modern in its design, which I love. But you're here to listen to comedy, not just listen to me talk about CFRC on and on and on. Well, you may want to, but I'm not going to do that for you today. Maybe another day. But let's listen to some comedy. I'd just like to say, as I always do, if I've missed a swear word in my editing abilities, or there are topics here that you find offensive, again, we do not intend to offend anyone out there. We're just here to entertain or educate or make you laugh like I am. So I have a little bit later on in the show. The reason I bring this up, of course, is because I have Nick Swardson and he can be a little bit on edge, I think. But we're going to start with Tom Papa, who's just a grumpy old man, but he's so funny. He's going to talk about, pets, Facebook. A little bit older comedy because he talks about Facebook and how it's like the new thing. I find that funny too. All right. I want you to enjoy yourself. So please keep tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM and Absolutely Frivolous every week at Thursdays at 5:30. Here he is, Tom Papa on CFRC 101.9 FM.
How old are you? Yeah. 27. Good for you. Unbelievable? Why? Why do you think it's unbelievable? Huh? Are you his friend? Do you know him? You don't even know him? You're just shitting on him? That's great about being guys. A girl would never say, if a girl was like, I'm 28. Unbelievable. No way. She would think it and a lot more other hateful but she wouldn't say it. Dude's just like, dude, that's unbelievable. I know. Ah! Best friends forever. You ever create so many usernames and passwords so no one will steal your identity that you no longer know your own identity? Like username, Tom Papa. Wrong. Monkey 47? Welcome. Then sometimes they email you back your password when you forget it. You're like, what the hell was I thinking? Butterfly whispers? Was I on ecstasy when I joined Amazon? Facebook is completely out of hand now, right? It's the whole planet now. It's too much. It's too many people. Everyone in the world. And you know, I would have been so much nicer to everyone in my life if I knew eventually they were all coming back. Hey, good to hear from you, Kenny. Sorry I left you in the woods that night. Glad you found your way out and grew up and stuff. Kids will be kids, huh? Powerful though, isn't it? It's changing the planet. The whole planet's being changed because of Facebook. No one saw any of this, right? A Jewish kid in America creates Facebook and it helps the Egyptian government collapse. No one saw that coming. Yeah. Even the Muslim Brotherhood was like, we'd like to thank the Jews. Feels weird. Imagine if it had been around throughout history, how many lives would have been saved? Look out, Lincoln, LOL. I'm playing Angry Birds. My mother's on it now. She's all old and confused. Yeah, she calls it my face. Are you on my face? Your father's on my face. I don't know if you're confused or perverted. Don't say that ever again. What's the big deal? Everyone's on my face. Uncle Bob, Aunt Betsy. Now the kids want a dog. They want a dog in the worst way. They're not getting a dog. I can't have one more thing in the house. I think it's okay to go to the bathroom anywhere at once. The kids do it. The cats do it. My wife does it. I can't have it. And when you're a kid and you run by it, you just go, you have to pick it up as the father. I don't even use tissue anymore. I just grab it. Is this anybody's? Anyone forget to do something? All sorry, because our neighbors got their kids a pit bull. A pit bull. I'm like, dude, it's going to eat your kids. He's like, yeah, maybe. Good point. He's like, no, dude, they don't want to kill. You have to train them to kill. They don't want to kill. No, it's a pit bull. It's built to kill. Its whole head is wall-to-wall teeth. They didn't put the eyes in the right place. They're just shoved in the back like an afterthought. It's like God was making it. It was like, well, everything gets eyes. I don't know why I made that. Some things shouldn't be pets, you know? I had a college roommate, one of these jackasses, had a boa constrictor, 20-foot-long thing in a fish tank this big. Thing was so pissed off, every time you walk by, it'd try and bite you. He's like, dude, you gotta be cool around it. It can sense your fear. Well, then get it the hell out of here. Who senses fear? The devil senses fear. That's not a pet. Get me a goldfish. That's a pet. Doesn't sense anything. Just floats around like a dumbass. Da-da-da-da. Big thing of fish poop hanging off its belly for weeks at a time. Da-da-da-da. Not dead. Not dead. I thought I was dead. I'm okay. I'm okay. I'll keep it going. But as much as I'm not into the whole animal thing, I think hunting's gotten a little out of hand. Really? Man versus animal? At this point? We kick their ass pretty good, isn't it, over? Really? I can see going after something that can kill you, right? Make it exciting. Going after a rhino with a ballpoint pen, you know? I was watching the Hunting Channel. Guy was going after turkeys. Turkeys. Not killer turkeys. Not even flying turkeys. Just goofy-ass, wobbly leg. This jackass is in camouflage from head to toe. He's got a high-tech rifle. That's all in camouflage. And he's commenting on it. He's like, I had him in my sights, but then he got away. Is the turkey getting away? Get up and chase it, you fat bastard. This is what you're matching wits with. You're dressed as a tree with a gun sticking out. The stupid bird's humping a plastic decoy 5 feet away. Why don't you just dress up like a turkey? Invite him into the house. Thanks a lot. Open the oven. Oh, potato. They say the economy's improving. I don't know because I don't understand it. Apparently nobody does, even the people who run it, even the people who report on it have no clue on what's going on with the economy. You wake up at 9 a.m, like, everything's great. By noon, we're all going down. What did they say? Why? And I try, I read the articles, I'm not an idiot. I read every day about the economy. It's like drinking Jägermeister reading these articles. It's like two paragraphs in, I'm just passed out on the kitchen floor. I wake up 6 hours later with no pants on. Who's Dow Jones? I feel weird.
Hey everyone, this is Joseph Guido. I am CFRC's Airwave YGK Musicians in Residence Project Intern. Do you love local music and supporting local arts? CFRC's annual funding drive is running until December 31st, and your gift is needed to help us provide local musicians with modern, top-of-the-line equipment, space, and technical support to better showcase their creativity on our airwaves all year round. Help us raise $25,000 this year. Make your gift today via cfrc.ca.
Join me and yell at the screen. I only have a wife who asks,
what's a touchdown?
Her sports IQ's driving me mad. I need to place a personal ad. I already have a wife, now I need a man. I need a platonic. lives with reckless abandon. I can't stand American Idol. Put on ESPN before I go homicidal. The days go by, but still no luck. Till this guy writes back, his name is Chuck. He says I don't fart that much and I think the Red Sox suck. That's the nicest thing anyone's ever wrote. I call Chuck back to say you got my vote. Now bring a six pack and I'll let you hold the remote. Cause he's my platonic male companion. With reckless abandon, we're gonna be the coolest best friends. I can't wait till we hang out all weekend. Then Chuck calls me. He says he can't make it tonight. He says him and his girlfriend got in a big fight. She thinks two guys hang out alone is really gay. And after 2 hours of being yelled at, Chuck now feels the same way. But Chuck, don't do this to me. Chuck, I just got HD. Come on, Chuck, would I do this to you? Please, Chuck, it's WrestleMania on pay-per-view. But fine, Chuck, go have your fight. Cause if having a male companion is wrong, I don't wanna be right. I say screw you, platonic male companion. You were phony with reckless abandon. I'm gonna go get on with my life. Oh crap, I'm back watching sports with my wife.
Rod, oh, he has such gorgeous eyes. Is he still stumping Madonna? Why is it called soccer over here and football over there? Isn't football just the game with the football? In hockey, why do they let them beat each other up like that? It's terrible. A scrum? What the hell is a scrum? Why does Brett Favre pronounce his name like that? Shouldn't it be Favre? You know, I've never seen the Lakers play, yet I still find Kobe Bryant pretentious. I always wonder what these athletes are running from. I think they're running from themselves. Did you do the dishes? Are you gonna walk the dog?
Oh, damn it, Chuck! Why? How can I quit you? It's just not fair!
CFRC's funding drive is now underway and running through December 31st. Donate today and get amazing CFRC prizes. For every $5 you donate, earn a ticket towards one of our weekly raffle draws featuring gifts from wonderful local businesses including Harper's Burger Bar, Hotel Wolf Island, Improbable Escapes, Kingston Canadian Film Festival, KPP Concerts, Long & McQuaid, Martello Alley, and Novel Idea. Enjoy the benefits of donating. Give today via cfrc.ca.
Did you recognize that sound? That's the sound of a healthy, well-cared-for cat. I truly hope you've been lucky enough to hear that sound before.
The feral cat population around Kingston and the surrounding areas has grown considerably over the last few years. And thanks to organizations like Kendra's Community Kitties, these feral cats are being fed, medically cared for, spayed, neutered, flea treated, dewormed, given winter shelters, and placed in loving homes whenever possible.
Hundreds of these special animals have been rescued by Kendra, and many of these wonderful felines are purring right now, safe and healthy.
But rescuing and rehoming feral cats isn't easy. It requires an enormous amount of time and effort, and there are a few ways you can help.
You can donate to Kendra's Community Kitties on their website, kckitties.com. Even a small amount will help pay for medication, spay and neutering procedures, and food and supplies to keep these felines sheltered and healthy in the cold winters or extreme heat of the summer. Because some of these kitties are not socialized, Kendra has committed herself to provide 22 dishes of food with fresh water every day, 365 days a year, to six feral colonies. Food prices have increased significantly, so donations of food and money are always needed. Funding assists with the process of finding homes for these cats as well, as it takes time and money to find the right individual or family to be matched with the right kind of cat. You can become a foster family for our feline friends. Go to kckitties.com and learn how you can care for and love a cat or even a family of kittens until they can be moved into their forever homes. At the colonies, Kendra plants the seeds of trust and socializes the feral felines when she brings them food at the same time each and every single day. So they're more accepting of humans when placed with foster families. But fostering a feral cat is no easy task. Kendra cannot take these cats from the colonies unless there are foster homes willing to commit to help these kitties gain trust with humans.
You can adopt one of these special cats or kittens. If you've already been thinking of getting a furry friend, reach out to Kendra at kckitties.com and she'll provide you with all the information you need to make this important decision.
Any help you can offer Kendra's community kitties will be tremendously appreciated. Not only by Kendra, but by the lucky feral felines she rescues.
And hey, maybe, just maybe, one day you'll get to hear
Panda say I love you.
Hey Kingston, it's Bahamas and you're listening to CFRC.
I'm excited for the summer. I like summer movies. I'm a big fan. I like big blockbustery. I'm like a nerd like that. Like movies like Transformers, I love that shit. I love that stuff. Like, I hate it, like, so many people are jaded now. Does anybody here have jaded movie friends? Where, like, they go to movie, like, they can't fucking like any movie. It's so annoying. I'm like, dude, I just saw Transformers, that was sick. Yeah, I saw it, bro. Sucked. Dude, it was kinda cool. Nah, sucked. Yeah, but that one scene, dude, saw it, sucked. It's like, people are so jaded. Like, it still looks cool, you know what I mean? Like, if you showed that movie 50 years ago, people would be like, ah! Their brains would explode. Ah! Everybody would lose their minds. They'd be out in the streets just stabbing each other. There would be chaos if you showed Transformers in, like, 1950. People now are like, yep, boo. Like, God, you can't appreciate anything. I always thought it'd be funny, though, if in a movie like that, if just to mess with all the stone people in the crowd at the theater, if right before the movie started, like Transformers, they just put, based on a true story. When the f*** did that happen? Are you kidding me? That happened? Did that happen? Are you serious? Oh my God. That's terrifying. Yeah, I always think of weird that. I always think it would be funny too. Because I always like movie previews before the movie. You know, they have the little trailers. I always like those. But I always think it'd be funny if they showed a really dramatic trailer, really serious, right? And they have a title at the end of it that has nothing to do with the trailer. Just again to mess with the audience. So really dramatic movie trailer, title doesn't make any sense. So they come on like, coming this fall, the story of a family. Brutally torn apart, the father killed in a horrible accident, the mother forced to raise 8 children on her own. In a cruel world, all they have is each other. coming this fall from the producers of Philadelphia and the director of Cast Away comes Boner Soup. People are like, what? That movie's called Boner Soup? About the dad who died of the kids? What the f*** is Boner Soup? Boner Soup. I didn't see a boner or soup in the whole trailer. What is that? Is it one thing? I don't want to see that. It's weird being a comedian. Like, it's like a weird job to have. And I was thinking about like what I wanted to be when I was a kid. So I never wanted to be do stand-up. I never thought about it. What I did want to be when I was a kid, I remembered. I wanted to be a ninja. Come on, man, right? That was the first thing I remember being like, I'm going to do this. And you're like so passionate when you're a kid. I'm going to do it. Dude, I want to be a ninja so bad. Wouldn't that be a cool world if we all became the very first thing? The very first thing you commit to, that's what it is. That's it. You have to be that. You have no choice. It'd be fucking crazy. Just be ninjas running around, princesses, quarterbacks throwing balls to pirates. This would be crazy. But I was like so committed to being a ninja when I was a kid. And you know what I'm talking about? Remember that when you were a kid, you put on your sweatpants? Make little weapons around the house. Didn't even know karate, just... just fight the cat. But like you grow up and you grow out of it. And like when the adults, like when you're a kid, all the adults lie to you. They're always like, when you get older, you can do whatever you want. Whatever you want to be, go be it. You little asshole. But you can't. Like, you can't be a ninja, you know what I mean? You can't. Go try it. Be a ninja, all right? Quit your job. Monday, get a black suit, a mask, sword. Just walk around during the day just kicking people in the face. You do that. I'm a ninja. That's my job. They just go and hide in the shadows. You can't do it. But I want to show up at my high school reunion as a ninja though and freak everybody out. Just throw everyone off. You just show up. Guys are like, hey, what's up, Nick? It's me, Bob. I'm a real estate agent now, and Jim's a lawyer. He's got his own firm. What are you doing? I am a ninja. I live in the shadows. They're like, okay, is he serious? And then you could like get back all the guys you hated, you know, they'd be like, hey, has anybody here seen Nick? Oh. These people have crazy jobs. Like UFC fighters, which is great. I'm a huge UFC fan. Love it. I don't know if you've ever seen Ultimate Fighting. It's crazy. It's like boxing, except they kick you and they f***ing choke you out. And they attack you. But it's like, that's their job. Like, it always blows my mind. Like, that's what you have to just go and fight somebody at work. Like, nobody, like, really wants to fight. But, like, that's your job. Like, some guy's just gonna make you bleed out of your eyes. It's awful. Like, yeah, I'm going to work. Oh, how's that gonna be? A nightmare? I mean, it's gonna be, someone's gonna attack me. Attack me. As hard as they can. They're really strong.
I'm Josh.
I'm Brady.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Rocco.
We're the Have to Work in the Morning Upstairs Neighbors of Punk Rock.
The Beta 58.
And you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.
Yeah.
Just
and secrets.